Hello and welcome back to Reeling in the Piers, where we talk about old movies, new movies and movies that were released specifically in March 2024. My name is Gary O'Brien and joining me as always for the monthly recaps, it's the wonderfully generous David Scanlon. So stick around, we hope you enjoy. David, we're back. Hello.
It's been a while.
Been a month. We haven't recorded a podcast. I know it feels like it was only like yesterday, David, but since February 17th.
Oh, God.
I know. Isn't it great to be back, David? Oh, so you look like good. You look like a little Augustus Gloop in Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory being like, all of this will be mine.
All right. Okay. Sure. it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Unfortunately, we don't have a huge number of good movies to talk about. We have some funny movies.
We've
got strange movies.
We have some great movies to talk about. We have great conversation coming up.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Stick around.
Stick around. Also, me and David haven't seen each other in like a month. So we're excited to see each other and talk loads again. But we did see each other the last 3 days as well. So
yeah.
We could be a bit burned out by this. I'm kind of sick of your face already.
Yeah, we really should have done this at the start of the
week. I'm feeling like Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka and I want to kick a Augustus into the chocolate river. Bye-bye.
And have the Oompa Loompas dance.
Oh man, yeah.
There's no... Wait, what's with the Wonka references?
It's called a callback, first of all. Second of all, I don't know.
Like, would you not make a Dune reference or a Roadhouse reference?
Okay, I kick you into the sandworm.
Sure.
With a roundhouse kick from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
There's a dildo from Drive Away Dolls.
A Roadhouse roundhouse kick.
Yeah, I'm not going to try that again. Didn't we say there was going to be a great conversation? You're welcome.
Anyway.
But yeah, for anyone who doesn't know what this is, me and David talk about all the movies that were released from the previous month. So we're going to be talking about Dune 2, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Ricky Stenicki, Drive Away Dolls, Roadhouse, and Late Night with the Devil. There's time codes if people want to jump around if they haven't seen those movies or are more particularly interested in others, some rather than others. If you wanted to get in touch with the podcast, it's what you call it. There's a Spotify Q&A, there's a YouTube comment section, and there's the email, readingthepiers@gmail.com. And we're also going to be talking about what's coming out next month, David.
Two Empire movies,
horror movies.
What are the two horror movies?
Late Night with the Devil and Ghostbusters. So spooky.
That's Ghostbusters.
So spooky, David. Ghosts are scary.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's a horror movie.
Oh, what, David? The sheer terror that one gets when watching Driveway Dolls and thinking that someone funded that?
Yeah, fucking hell.
Yeah. So David's seen three of these and I've seen all seven, so...
Did you actually watch all... Oh, fuck yeah, you did.
So this one's actually going to be different to the other ones in that I'll actually be doing more of the talking this time.
Oh, great. Two Amazon Prime movies as well.
Yeah.
And neither of them were good.
How dare you?
Neither of them were
good. I think... You know what?
Neither of them...
You've not seen either of them. Me. I'll tell you if it's good or not.
They're fine.
Yeah. But you want to kick us off with the biggest movie of the year?
The biggest movie of the year?
Biggest movie of the year.
Dune Part 2.
No, Godzilla X Kong, David, The New Empire. It's literally the biggest movie. It's got two big things and then more big things.
Yeah, is there not big things in Dune as well?
There's only like three big worms. That's about it. Max.
Okay, but like... We all actually know the scale of Arrakis compared to Earth. So they could be huge. They could be much bigger than Godzilla and Kong put together on their shoulders. With a trench coat in disguise, trying to get into the cinema to see Late Night with the Devil. Anyway, Dune Part 2 is the sequel to Dune. I believe it's not called Dune Part 1, it's just called Dune. A bit like the way Star Wars was called Star Wars, not Star Wars A New Hope. Anyway, this follows on from Dune, which took us...
Dune Part 1.
Which ended with Paul Atreides joining the Fremen in the kind of wilderness of Arrakis. And this is more a story of him ascending to the Messiah level of the Fremen through helping them kind of take down the Harkonnen armies and trying to take back Arrakis for the Fremen. Stellar cast.
Yep.
Led by Timmy, big boy, small boy, oh, big desert, Timothy Chalamet.
Big desert little boy.
Small boy, big worm, big desert, big planet.
Big planet, little worms by scale, but still big worms.
Little Messiah.
Little Messiah, big trench coat.
And then he is joined by Zendaya, I was going to say Benicio Del Toro. It's not Benicio Del Toro. It's
Javier Bardem. The other one.
Rebecca Ferguson. We then have new joiners, including Christopher Walken. We have Elvis. What's his name again?
What you call it? Austin Butler.
Austin Butler.
Yeah.
And
Florence Pugh. Leah Seydoux.
We have the Harkonnens, who are Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista. Who are also in the previous Dune. So for those who have seen Dune and haven't seen Dune Part 2, spoilers ahead, because I can't be sure that I won't say something that's spoilery. It's been a while since I've seen this movie. But if I was to give like an overall sense of, or a quick review of the movie, very, very good, but a little bit under my expectation. I was kind of hoping for a 5-star, even like a 4.5-star, where it's like, this is something that you could hang your hat on for years to come and be like, this is the culmination of a series. Probably didn't hit those heights. Still very good.
Yeah. A cinematic treat, David.
Yeah. Still well worth seeing on the max screen.
The biggest screen you can.
In Omniplex Rathmines.
Or your PSP. Whatever it is.
If you
get it on your PSP, watch it on PSP.
But overall, very, very good, but just a little bit underwhelming in my sense. Some brilliant scenes, some brilliant moments. Mm-hmm. I think the standout for me, like, of that cast, I think is Javier Bardem. I think he's the one, like, I think everyone's good, but I think Javier Bardem is the one that I think really bought into it. I also forgot Josh Brolin's in this as well, he kind of turns up a little bit later in the movie. But Javier Bardem is great. He plays this kind of mad religious zealot almost. Yeah. Although he's not very aggressive. Anyway, I think he was great. I think everyone does a good job. Zendaya's good.
Yeah.
Timmy's good. Mm. Austin Butler's great as well. He's a bit manic.
Yeah. It's what you want. Yeah. You want someone a bit unhinged for that role.
Yeah. And Rebecca Ferguson's actually great as well, because she has to play a weird character.
Yeah.
But overall, I had a good time, but just a little bit underwhelming. I'll probably get into it later on where exactly my underwhelmment came from.
Yeah.
But let me know.
Your levels of whelmed was far too below par.
Exactly.
Yes.
So tell me, as someone who read the book.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Do you know I've read the book?
Yeah.
Oh, I've read the book. I've read three books.
896 pages.
So my biggest thing with this movie is, I think it's, like I said, a great cinematic experience in regards to epic scale, the cinematography, the world building, the sci-fi elements that Denis Villeneuve incorporates into it to make it feel like something we've never seen before. All really, really impressive. I just think from a story perspective, it just drags, but yet feels so... What's the word? I used the word pedestrian, I feel, before, where it just feels like we're just being... we're just trotting along something that's already been pre-established. And I know there's obviously a point in the movie where he sees the future and stuff like that, but like, nobody feels like they're making any decisions that have any sort of real consequences or actions. It just feels like they're doing things because they have to do them, which leans into the fact that you find Javier Bardem the most endearing sort of character performance, because he's the one who changes it up the most from the book.
Yeah.
And I feel like he feels like a proper character and everyone else is reading scripts that were based on a book.
So, I think it's almost like hand-holding the story. It's like you're being led along.
Yeah, but it's just more like things happen because this next thing has to happen, rather than like... Mm. Like, there's some really cool elements in it. Like, I think there's like that scene where we see them kind of taking down the spice.
Yeah.
Like, that feels good, but we never get anything sort of like... sort of character building like that again in the movie.
Yeah, like the whole idea is the Fremen, when Paul has joined the Fremen, they've turned into almost a terrorist organization. Like, sorry, they seem like a terrorist organization from the point of view of the Harkonnens, but they see themselves as almost freedom fighters, which is, again, highlights, it's very kind of similar to what you would see in real life.
You love that gray area.
No, but you know what I mean? Like,
But
I feel like that point where they take down that spice miner, there should have been more of that.
Yeah.
Of like them being that almost like a nuisance or annoyance for the nuisance for the for the Harkonnens. But yeah, it feels like they do certain actions. You see Dave Bautista get a bit angry, and then there's nothing really else to it.
And then then Elvis comes in.
Yeah.
Fixes something that we don't know what he's fixing. Yeah, and then all of a sudden
not too much spoilers, but there's a bit where Dave Bautista is leading the Harkonnens, and then Elvis arrives, and then Elvis does something, but I'm like, Why didn't Dave Bautista just do that?
And then like, Stellan Skarsgård's like, you've done a good job. Yeah, thank you very much.
Like, that, it didn't...
It makes no sense.
They didn't make that clear as to why... Like, if they hadn't made it a point of, like, him being this kind of military leader that has information or is able to use his sense of, like...
Insanity.
Again, yeah. Being that type of psychological lunatic warfare. Yeah. And taking that and using that against the Fremen, that would have made sense. But it just feels like they were like, oh, we can just do this now.
Yeah. It just didn't click with me. But like, I still like the choices they made for that character.
Ratha.
Especially there's a great scene in like a gladiatorial ring that is just so cool and feels so sci-fi, and it's just a real treat.
Or like even the whole political aspect of that, of like when he has to fight three people, but one of them is a bit of a wild card.
Yeah.
And he looks up and he knows, because Stellan Skarsgård's, I don't know any of the characters' names, Stellan Skarsgård's character did something with the three fighters, or one of the three fighters, and it made it a little bit more difficult for Elvis. I'm just going to continue.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, the last point I just want to make is there is a battle towards the end of the movie, and this should have felt like something out of Lord of the Rings or something out of, like, even like something like Harry Potter, which feels like a kind of culmination battle, something that we, you know, something that you would see in a montage of like, you know, big speeches or something like that. It was felt so underwhelming, and it was over way too quickly.
Yeah. But this is what I mean, is it's like there was never, it was just thing happens, we move on to next thing.
Yeah.
We never really got enough time with moments and then with the following consequences afterwards, because there's a scene where there's a big battle happens and then all of a sudden, they've won and are in control we're moving on to the next thing.
Now, I will say they do partially make up for that with the fight between Elvis and little Timmy. Did you?
That was good scene.
It was good.
Big fan of that. It's so hard to portray the danger of a knife fight in the movie, I find. And I think this did a really good job.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say in the books it's slightly different, it's better, but I don't give a shit.
Would it have made it more interesting if they found each other on the battlefield?
No, it has to happen in that room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a whole thing, because everyone needs to kind of see it.
Okay.
It's a whole, because it's all to do with the politics of it.
Yeah. And I did enjoy, they make a decision towards the end, or little boy Timmy Chalamet makes a decision towards the end of the movie. I thought that was great, because he says something to Zendaya and then he makes a decision, which I thought, again, it's so political and it's so kind of royalist of like deciding something based on what's best for
a nation or
an empire.
Empire.
But overall.
And I just think, just on Zendaya's character, I just think she's just being Zendaya rather than a character, I find.
I thought she was quite good at the old action kind of being...
Yeah.
Hard-nosed.
See, again, I know this sounds weird, but I just feel like in the book, she's so much more behind Paul that in the movie, it's weird to see her... Again, this is not to say this is bad. This is just why I didn't gel with it. Mm. Because it was just like, well, why is she not on board with this? Because everything I've read up until that point is she's on board with it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, it just feels very Zendaya to not be on board with it. Because she just has a problem with little white boys.
Yeah.
Being Tom Holland and Timothée Chalamet. And then soon to be the two tennis players.
Fair. So that whole thing between her and Rebecca Ferguson isn't in the books. Do you know the way there seems to be like a head-to-head between those?
I don't recall.
Okay.
And then also the last person I want to mention about casting is Christopher Walken was horrendously miscast.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. So,
you trying to do your Walken?
Yeah, I was going to do it.
Paul Atreides!
Why?
May thy knife split and shatter!
So, who would you have cast? Or what's the Emperor's
John
wife?
Mulaney. No.
Hey.
I was sand walking across the desert. As he discovers, my John Mulaney's not very good.
Yeah,
fair. Who would I've cast? I don't know. I just
what's his vibe?
I just feel like Christopher Walken felt like you put him in sci-fi clothes and you just got pushed onto set.
Yeah, okay. He's a hi. He's hi. Like,
Paul
Atreides.
You gotta marry my daughter.
you gotta put the watch up your butt. You gotta do it for me.
You gotta, Paul. It's your father's ring, Paul. You gotta hide it up your ass. This is
Magic Austin, Christopher Walken as Rick from Rick and Morty.
Morty,
come on, Morty.
Morty, it's a multiverse story, Morty. So overall, I think it's a great cinematic experience. However, yeah. I feel very underwhelmed by the conclusion of it. If they make another one, which they said they are, I'll be excited to see it, but not as excited as I was to see this one.
Okay. And it's the next one's Dune Messiah.
Dune Messiah, which is a really, not a boring book, but it's, because I've read that one too, David.
What a loser.
What a loser. It's just much more political intrigue, and it's just very, what you call it, like people conspiring against each other, conspiracy theories, but people working against each other and stuff. So like, there's not much action in it. So I'd be interested to see how they kind of make up for that in the next movie.
Would it not be more similar to like Game of Thrones?
It is, but I feel like Game of Thrones is always someone getting their tits out or getting their, what you call it, neck slit. And that doesn't really happen in Dune Messiah.
But can Benioff and Wise not add it in?
I'm sure you can give it a red hot go. Red hot go.
Okay.
Fair. But yeah, shall we move on?
Let's do it.
Cool. Speaking of violence and unnecessary nudity, Roadhouse.
Okay.
So this is
it where he told on his nudity?
No, it's just where he always has abs out.
Oh.
And then McGregor's always, yeah, see this, it's, you know what I mean? I'm not, look, it's been a while. I'm a bit of rusty, David. 17th of February, you know, a whole month and a bit's passed.
Yep.
So Roadhouse, it's a movie about an ex-UFC fighter called Dalton who takes a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse only to discover that this paradise is not all that it seems. So basically it's
paradise, Florida.
Yeah.
Whatever
it looks, it looks beautiful though. It okay. looks beautiful. But my God, are you not allowed to have any rights?
Is it not in the swamp, no?
No, it looks great. Okay. It looks really good.
Oh, sorry, the Keys, sorry, yeah.
Keys. Yeah, so basically, JKG plays this bouncer and he gets hired to be the bouncer.
Good for him, sorry. Getting a job in his industry, that's tough.
JKG basically goes to work in this roadhouse as a bouncer. But what's really interesting about it is, I've not seen the original one, so I don't have any love for it, so I can kind of go into this a bit blank, in the sense that he's just playing it so comedically and so charmingly, and he's just like, he doesn't want to beat anyone up, but he just has to. And like, yeah. there's a scene where he takes down the initial sort of bad guys, and he's just slapping them. And he's like, he's off throwing punches, and he brings them all to the emergency room, and he goes, oh, that guy might have a concussion, and oh, I broke his arm, so he might need, he's just really personable throughout the whole movie, and that's when the movie really works. And then there's like great scenes of like him, and he's like, he doesn't even do all the beating people up, he like trains the other people to do it. So it's just, he's growing this community and within the roadhouse and making them all stand up for themselves and improve, you know, the life there. And then Conor McGregor shows up, and just, he is so bad. Like, have you seen any of the interviews he's doing recently?
No.
Oh, David, I don't really, watch it's Conor really McGregor. Bad. Like, he is suffering severe withdrawal symptoms, and he has like really bad tics, and I hope he gets help, but just stay away from movies. If it helps, sure, but I don't think it will. He basically plays a hitman who's just unhinged, and the first time we see him, he's like sleeping with someone's wife and then walking down into a marketplace fully naked and just steals someone's coat and sets the whole marketplace on fire. He's like trying to play like the Joker, but he's Conor McGregor, but also he's, all of his lines are that of Conor McGregor, but he's trying to deliver them as someone being Conor McGregor that's not him. And it's just, he's just one step away from Conor McGregor, even though he is Conor McGregor. It's baffling to watch. But I will say, he does play, his character is just like superhuman, just indestructible, and that's a bit fun.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing. And watching, I will say, him and JKG, they don't really have good enough chemistry to kind of like make McGregor's bad acting worth it in a way.
Okay.
But look, it's a Doug Liman movie, so it's got good action. However, they did this really weird thing where apparently they would shoot it four times or maybe three times. Once not hitting someone, once hitting a pad like on that person's head or something, and then once in slow-mo. And then they've used CGI to like cut them all together to look awful. And it's really jarring. So I watched Monkey Man as well. We'll talk about that next episode, next month. And the action's so good in that. And that's Dev Patel's first time directing. And Doug Liman's done like 10 movies.
Yeah.
And it's so jarring. It just like, it doesn't look like they're real people fighting. And then once the hits go in, it's just, they turn into characters from Tron. It's so strange. I don't get it. So it's perfectly middling. It's like it's a really solid, a streaming watch. Mark here watched it and said, this is a terrible movie. I had a great time. And like, look, watch it for JKG alone, I would say. But they've teased the sequel. They might get it because it's super popular, but yeah.
Biggest movie on Amazon. Biggest original on Amazon.
Yeah. Do I have anything else to say about it? No, cartoon. Yeah.
Is there any other actors in it?
There's a few, yeah. No. Billy Magnuson's in it, and he's pretty good.
Oh, he's the boss, I'm sure.
No, yeah, he is, yeah. And then, Lucas Gage is in it, who's in a couple of things. He was in The White Lotus and something else recently as well. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I wouldn't be rushing out to go see it, but if you're looking for a really steady or solid midweek watch,
Okay, fair.
Roadhouse. I was kind of hoping someone would say Roadhouse and do a Roundhouse Kick. They didn't. I think I gave it 2.5 stars. It would have been a 3.5.
Straight away. No. So a Roadhouse Roundhouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's fine. Speaking of,
we're slowly descending into madness.
Yeah. What we got next?
Next movie is Driveaway Dolls. So, I'm gonna have to get some character names up here because
I have them all here.
Go on. No,
Margaret Qualley plays Jamie, and Geraldine Viswanathan plays Marion.
Okay, so Jamie and Marion, are two lesbians, but they're not together.
No, they're friends.
And due to a breakup, they decide that they're going to go on a drive away from New York. No, it's not New York. Philadelphia down to Florida to visit
Tallahassee
to visit Marion's grandmother, aunt, whatever.
I watched this morning.
So they decide to go to this car rental place where they literally just take a car from Philadelphia. They drive it down and then they give it back to the people in Tallahassee, but they only have to pay a certain amount for it. Anyway, what happens is they take a car that was supposed to be given to some gangsters who left something in the trunk. And now they're on the drive from Philadelphia down to Tallahassee with this package in the trunk with these gangsters after them.
Yeah. Simple. Classic Coen Brothers movie.
Simple concept.
Someone has something they're not meant to have, and two bumbling idiots are chasing them.
Yeah. This movie is awful.
It's really bad.
So the way I describe it is they have about 60 minutes, probably less than 60 minutes worth of actual movie content.
Yeah.
And they had to add about 30 minutes worth of transitions. And I mean transitions in the actual sense that, like, transitioning from one scene to another to take it up to feature length. The characters are annoying, especially Margaret Qualley's character is so annoying.
I got on board with her.
No, she's... I had a great time. That accent is so annoying. I didn't mind it.
Someone said she sounds like Sandy Cheeks from SpongeBob.
Yeah, she's like irritably annoying. And she does the same thing over and over again. Yeah. It's really annoying. The two lads following are morons and it's, again, annoying. I thought Coleman Domingo was fine, but he doesn't really get much to do. Bill Camp's pretty funny. He's the guy that gives him the car and something happens to him, but it's quite funny. Yeah, it's kind of funny. There are some cameos in this and none of them... They're all pointless.
Yeah.
There's no... Like, what is it that any of them do that makes them even memorable?
Pedro Pascal's character does something that happens to him that happens to his character in Game of Thrones, and that's funny, you remember?
Yeah, I suppose.
It's not good.
Yeah. The story is, like, crude, but, like, not funny. And, like, I don't even know a way you would make that funny. I can understand that, you know, comedy is subjective, but, like, I don't know anyone who would find that funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. But, yeah, overall, this is, like, concept-wise, I think it's so simple and it's, like, it's necessarily bad because it's how simple it is, but, like, there was nothing to it where it was like, once you find out what they're carrying or what's the concept, there's no second twist to it, which I feel like they should have done. Do I have any? No, it's awful. It's the worst movie I've seen probably for a year or so.
So why I don't like it is because of the talent that are in it.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, Ethan Coen wrote this, who's written many, many good movies.
Although, actually, I don't know if you heard that he wrote this with his wife.
Who are no longer together.
They're in an open relationship.
They're in an open relationship, but I don't think they're together anymore anyway. Surprised that didn't work out.
Yeah.
This is coming from a sexually repressed man. I've decided this movie because it's so horny and I feel like it's such a incorrect, or what's the word? Such a just appalling depiction of lesbians in the sense of, like, I feel like a man wrote this.
Yeah.
Because they're just fucking and thinking of dicks and dildos the whole time. Yeah. Now, look, there could be some lesbians like that.
Yeah.
But every lesbian in this movie is doing that. And I just feel like, their characters don't... Not that they don't seem like real people, but they're just, similar to what you say there. It's like they come across quite annoyingly in terms of, like, the decisions they make and the motivations they have. There's obviously this big twist of what they find out, what they've been, that they're carrying this thing, and it never really goes anywhere other than to a bad joke, and then that continues to be the story.
Yeah.
So it's just very strange just watching something with so much talent in it just be so one note.
So, the kind of thing I can compare it to is...
It's like The Bubble.
No, The Bubble. I was going to say...
Also with Pedro Pascal.
Burn After Reading.
See, I like that.
No, but the problem with... The difference with Burn After Reading is you have that second layer. So, you know J.K. Simmons' character?
Yeah.
You have the people going, wait, what?
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen in this movie. Yeah. So, they're all bumbling idiots.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't have the political... the political agents or the CIA out on the outside, or even like the Russians in Burn After Reading, who are being told what's going on, and are being like, that can't be right. These morons. But like everyone's a moron.
Yeah,
in this.
They're like, yeah, I will say, like even Bernie Feldstein, who I love,
she has
some agency, but she's meant to be a police officer, but she's an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Even when she goes to the car place and just like looks at it and goes, well, that's my job done.
Yeah, it's just a frustrating watch.
Yeah.
And
what did you think about those transitions?
The actual scene transitions?
Yeah.
I don't think they're as bad as you remember.
Okay.
I think they're very jarring.
Yeah.
Very jarring. There's a whole thing with a cameo with a famous pop star.
Yeah.
That can all be binned.
Yeah, I suppose. But like, they obviously got that name involved and they were like, oh, we have to use it.
But like, it's so pointless.
Yeah.
It's just very silly. I don't know. It feels like someone wrote a movie as a joke and then actually were like, oh, fuck it, we'll actually make it. And it's not very good.
Yeah. But it and the other thing is they're trying to go for this whole kind of B-movie vibe.
I think they said that after they made it.
Okay, but like.
No, because like, it does try. It's very similar to a lot of the other stuff he does. I just feel like turned out shit and they were like, we were going for that.
Okay.
I don't know. But the transitions make me think otherwise. But then again, that could have just been done in the editing.
Yeah.
The script, I think, is... Like, even how the movie ends is just a bit of an eye roll. I don't know if you remember. They leave that bag as they drive away.
What bag?
The arts,
bag with the... Yeah. Yeah, okay, sorry, yeah. I know what you're talking
about. I just saw that. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you liked it and you thought it was funny, let us know.
Yeah.
But
we'd be interested to see a different point of view anyway.
And your girlfriend didn't like it.
Yeah, she
did. And like that's a what you call it, a damning sort of condemnation of a movie.
Any joy in it. Like,
and she gives movies always the benefit of the doubt. She know, like she could watch something that's an absolute turd and she'd be like, yeah, but they all went and they all tried. I'm like, fair play for having such hope.
There's no, because there's no characters in it who are...
There's no good vibes.
Everyone's a moron.
Yeah, that's true. Fucking,
yeah, terrible person.
Yeah, someone called Gary though, so I'll give it socks there.
Yeah.
Speaking of One Note, can I move on to the next movie?
What note would that be?
Late Night with the Devil. So this is a really interesting movie in the sense that what happens is there is a late night show from the 70s called Night Owls, and the host is played by a guy called David Dasmalchian, who people would know from many, many things. But he plays a guy called Jack Delroy, but he is going up against Johnny Carson and he cannot beat Johnny, and he is trying his best, and he's gone through many different things in his life. His wife passed away and he's been so close to the rankings and stuff. But there's also a really interesting backstory with him in that he's connected with, you know, like in America, you know, like Camp David and that sort of secret society and stuff like that. So he has all those sort of connections. So for one week, for Sweeps Week, for Halloween, he decides to pull out all the stops and get in a what are they called again?
Medium?
Yeah, medium. He gets in someone who's like a sort of a mystical skeptic, and then not someone who is skeptical of the mystics, not someone who's mystically skeptic, and then a little girl who was the only survivor at a mass murder in a cult, a mass suicide at a cult, and the professor who was helping her deal with the demon that is within her. So all these people are on the show.
Yeah.
And what happens is they know it's the lad, they know it's their biggest chance to go up against Johnny Carson, but things start happening throughout the night that make it very spooky and weird. And what the interesting thing about this movie is it's all like found footage, so it's all shot like as a live broadcast. So you're like you're watching a late night show. But then when the commercials come up, it's like B-roll footage of like the cameras being on and people just recording and stuff like that.
So like people would just be wandering around for stuff.
Yeah, but it'd be like black and white and it'd be like really shaky camera and stuff like that. So it's like a bit of a found footage. So it's a really interesting spin on it. So it's really cool concept in that regard. However, you kind of know where it's going by the end of it quite quickly. You kind of guess what's going to happen. And then you're kind of just waiting for that to happen. And then when it happens in a very... insane way that's just like, oh, wait, what the fuck? And then the movie's kind of over. So like, even though it's an hour and a half, I feel like you could make it a really strong 30 minutes. Now, I went with people and they were all like, yeah, but then it wouldn't be a late night talk show runtime. Who cares? It doesn't have to be that long.
Yeah.
But the crowd I went with, they seemed to have a really good time. I found it really interesting was people kept going to the toilet during the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
But I was like, come back. That's when the character development is happening. Because like David Dushmelian, he's playing like two characters really, because he's playing the desperate late night show host where the cameras are on.
Yeah.
And then he's like scared and he's hoping things work and he's got like a sidekick like his Andy Richter who's he's like, dude, this is fucked. Like, we need to leave. And then you have like the coked up producers like, this is great.
And there's an audience as well.
So like, yeah, it's a really interesting concept. I really applaud it in the sense of like, it did something no one else has done. I just felt it was just a bit of a letdown in regards to the pacing and then actually the delivery of the original premise of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Interesting.
But yeah, David Dushmelian, I think I pronounced that right. He's the lead man.
Love to see him. Fair play to him.
Yep.
He's one of the few guys who has appeared multiple times in DC properties, and he's also appeared in...
He was in Marvel. Dark Knight.
Yeah.
He was in Suicide Squad. He was in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Other things.
Fair play
to him. Was he in Spider-Verse? I feel like it might have been Spider-Verse.
Could have been. He's doing it. He has a good career.
Yeah.
Considering...
he's an asshole.
No, but he's not. Like, he would be what? C-list? Celebrity?
Yeah. Like, he's 48. Mm. He's in Prisoners?
Yeah.
He was in Oppenheimer? He's in Dune Part 2?
Yeah, fuck, he plays one of the
He's in Blade Harkins. Runner?
Yeah.
Jesus, this guy's everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And he's do you know what? I've seen interviews with him, and he's like a proper nerd. Like, not a nerd in the sense that he's fucking deep. He's fucking dweeb. But, like, he knows his stuff, and, like, he obviously, like, he puts a lot into it and stuff, which is, it's good to see.
He made that deal with the devil.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, okay. That's a bit middling. Should we talk about some good movies, David? Should we talk about what we saw the other... What's the name of the segment called? David, tell you what I saw the other day.
I don't know if I have great movies to... No, that's not true. Actually, I have a really good one to talk
about. Okay, go on. Hit me up. What's your movie?
My good one is Howl's Moving Castle, which I enjoyed, but it's that weird vibe of Miyazaki where... there's a lot of stuff going on and there's always a demon and someone is not always what they seem, but overall I thought it was a good almost like fairy tale like adventure, and animation is great. It's story is a little bit all over the place. I kind of wish they emphasized certain pieces of the story a little bit more, but overall good movie. I gave it 3.5 stars.
Did I shit on that immediately?
Yeah, go on.
It's my least favorite Miyazaki movie.
Okay, why?
What's
the main issue?
The story. I just kind of didn't care. See, it's a romance, and I was like, get over yourself.
Okay. Yeah. But no, the biggest thing for me is they make this big deal about the war because of the prince, and that went over my head.
Yeah.
And then he appeared at the end, and I was like, oh, yeah. Fuck, okay.
Yeah, it's just a bit balls, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
But did you watch it in English?
Watched it dubbed, yeah.
Do you know? Oh wait, you watch it? Dub. Yeah, sorry.
Christian Bale,
yeah. And Billy Crystal plays the fire. Yeah. I think they're great.
Yeah.
The little boy as well is Jacob Tremblay. No, I can't remember who the little boy is, but he's good. Yeah. No, it's a decent cast of characters, and that's on Netflix. Good adventure. It's Netflix. Yeah.
Speaking of Netflix. No, I'll let you talk about that one. I'm going to talk about something on Disney Plus, David. So, to set the scene, I wanted a really nice comedy. I wanted a comedy movie I hadn't seen before. I didn't want there to be romance in it. I didn't want there to be drama in it. I wanted a pure comedy on a streaming service that was highly rated. So I did all those filters on Letterboxd. And once I got all the stand-ups out of the way, I found a movie called 9 to 5, David, with Dolly Parton, Jane Fonda, and the other one. What's her name? Shit, she's in Grace and Frankie.
No, it's over my head.
Lily Tomlin.
Oh, sorry.
This is a great movie, David. This is, you'll love this because it's just people fucking over someone else. So what happens is this boss man, he's played by an actor called Dabney Coleman, who plays Franklin Hart Jr. They use the word fart far too much to refer to him as. But basically, he's a prick. He's like super misogynistic. He's a racist. He's a bigot. And he takes all the girls' good ideas and stuff. So finally, they decide, you know what? What if we killed him? And then there's a joke about killing him. They all fantasize about it. There's like really cool, like, they all come up with, like, the movie does this really cool thing. It's just, it has a load of fun. And they, like, one of them dreams about, like, poisoning him, but, like, it's like a Snow White, like pie. But, like, they do, like, Disney animation in it, and there's, like, her in the dress and everything. So there's a lot of fun with that. It's just three pals just getting together to just dick over this absolute bastard. And it just takes so many turns you're not expecting. And it's really funny. And Dolly Parton, first movie, she's great in it. And Dave the Song, of course, 9 to 5, is an absolute banger. Didn't win Oscar that year for Best Original Song. Something that actually happened in a movie won. And David, I've always said, something
you get... Are you going to stand by your principles?
David, I've always said something deserves to win if it's an absolute banger. And 9 to 5 was robbed.
So it sounds a bit like Horrible Bosses meets Bad Sisters.
I've not seen Bad. Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it's exactly that vibe. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. It's like an, I feel like it's, how long is it? It's like, it's an hour and 50 minutes, but it's just, and the comedy is razor sharp and it's really silly at times. But yeah, no, it's just, yeah, I would highly recommend it for a fun time. And I'm so surprised I liked it as much as I did.
There you go.
But yeah, any other movies?
So this isn't a great movie. I'm sorry. I didn't enjoy it. I don't think you enjoyed it either. Frances Ha.
Why are we talking about that?
No, the only reason I want to talk about it is, the reason I picked it is, it appears in a couple of Letterboxd lists, like, most popular movie, I think is, hold on, let me check. Official top 250 films with most fans. So, this is by Noah Baumbach, and it stars Greta Gerwig, and it's about a girl who's, like, kind of finding her way. But she's way too old to be finding her way.
Some of us are late bloomers, yeah, David.
I suppose.
Some of us still have a podcast.
But the only question I wanted to add, I wasn't a huge fan of it. As you mentioned, it's a little bit up its own hole. I think there's a lot going on, and it's a little bit winding, and there's decisions the story takes, and it's a little bit like, why are we doing that? I want to ask a question. Is there anyone out there who really enjoyed this, or who's like a big fan of this movie? And if so, is there anything precise about it or anything specific about it that's like...
I could see it as being quite a relatable film for like women in their like late 20s who kind of feel this way, and to see a character making the decisions that they have made and to get in situations. And just remember the scene where she's in that sort of like... She's back at her own college, but she's serving wine, and then some famous. Like, I feel like there's those sort of relatable moments.
To be fair, I saw this very, very good review. Hold on, let me just get it up, because it describes, I think, what we're feeling in one part. So a guy has seen the movie three times. First time was when he was younger than Francis, so he's younger than 27, and he just couldn't stand, you know, most of the characters. Thought the movie was, you know, fine, a bit like what we think. Second time he saw it was when he was 27. And he was living through that kind of life when he was like a little bit all over the place. And he understood what these characters were going through. And, you know, he could understand the experience. And then he saw it again when he was older. And it was just like a harrowing experience. Because he's like, I don't want to, that was just such a hard time in my life. So maybe I'm just privileged enough that I never had that issue. I always, not that I had, no, knew where I was going, but like I always had a purpose. And yeah, I just feel like...
You send up your own hell.
No, but like...
No, I get you, yeah.
The big thing for me is like, she's almost too proud of her own... No, she's too proud. And there's a decision she makes in the movie where she goes to Paris. I'm like, what are you doing?
You want to go to Paris, David?
But like, she goes to Paris on a whim just because like...
Who would ever do that, eh?
Someone said it like, oh, I was in Paris. She's like, she can't see herself being below that person, beneath that person. So she has to go to Paris.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, again, it kind of comes back to Driveway Dolls, where it's like stupid characters making stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Like
now,
Plus the two lads that she lives with, they're really annoying.
Yeah, that's fair. But see, I think all of that is obviously quite intentional. But yeah. But put it this way, it's like, I'd say it's a super relatable experience for people, like I said, and people can kind of resonate with it. But then again, does that mean it's entertaining? Because
you
can make a movie all about my life and I'd watch it and be like, fucking that guy won't shut up.
No, but like, there should be a point of view character.
I 100% agree. Yeah. But see,
I think that's what the movie's missing.
Because it's missing it because she doesn't know who that person is, because she's being the point of view person of her life, and she doesn't know how to have an external point on that because she's writing it. And I know Baumbach's not going to direct it because he's a fantasies her.
He's a what?
He fancies her.
Oh, he fancies her. Okay, sorry. Were they married?
No, I think this might have been... Lily was telling me about the timeline. I forget. It's
no, sorry. Were they married at any point?
Oh, they're no, but they're together now.
They're
no, Baumbach and Greta Gerwig.
Okay, sorry.
But he has a kid with some other famous actress whose name I forget. But the timeline of that gets iffy around this movie.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Who gives a fuck? Do you. Love is love, eh?
Yeah.
Let's go back. Right. Is that everything?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Did you have anything else? Because I was going to go 3 and 3. We usually do 3 and 3.
Oh, fine. I have 2 more, but like, I'm just worried about time. Okay. I'm going to go with Tangerine. That is a movie directed by Sean Baker, who we would know from Red Rocket. And this is a movie that is about...
He also did Flower Project.
Florida Project as well. Have you seen that as well, haven't you? This movie, it's just about this sort of trans woman who gets out of prison and finds out her pimp is sleeping with another woman, and it's just making it her mission to just find him and confront him and right a wrong, in a way. While also, there's another character who's played by a taxi driver who gets embroiled in this madness.
De Niro's in it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, that's really the story. It's just, it's a bit like Red Rocket in that it's just stressful and characters are doing things and you're like, ah, stop. But the biggest thing about this movie is it's all shot on like iPhone 5s and it looks incredible because he used some filter or something or anything like that. It's just a great kinetic energy to the movie. There's some great performances in it. The two leads I don't think had acted much before this. It's nothing amazing. It's not going to blow your socks off or anything like that. Yeah. But it's an interesting movie to watch having seen Red Rocket, because I think Red Rocket is better, but it's interesting to kind of go back to this and be like, ah, this is where it kind of began, where you wanted to stress people out.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Sean Baker typically does that where he gets people who aren't necessarily actors. Like, not big actors, but... Yeah, he always seems to get a good kind of performance out of them, which is good. Last one for me is 9 Days.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
For anyone who hasn't seen this, this is what we would describe as the most hidden of gems.
Yes, absolutely.
It is a story about the concept of being given life, let's say. So, there's a lot of stories about people after they die and getting into heaven. This is almost that story, but it's from... the opposite end. So you're a being, and for you to get to actually live, to like become a baby and go through the whole thing of life, you have to go through an interview process which takes 9 days. And so we have, I can't remember if it was like 10 candidates or something.
I'd say
like nine candidates. And Brian Tyree Henry is almost like this angel type character Winston Duke.
Yeah.
My apologies. It was Winston Duke.
You're thinking about him from the next movie.
Yeah, next movie. So it's Winston Duke who plays this angel-like character who previously had a real life and then obviously passed away, and he's now doing this as kind of a job in the afterlife, and he takes them through this interview process. But unfortunately, there can only be one person who takes up the mantle to be given life, so he has to obviously cut people. But he... he's so sentimental that he tries to give them like one last wish before they kind of drift away and kind of cease to exist. But it's just an incredible movie. Like it's so, like, I'm surprised you enjoyed it as much as you did, because it's like so sweet.
Yeah.
There is like, it's incredible. Like, it's an incredibly strong cast. It includes Winston Duke. We have Benedict Wong plays like his kind of supervisor type character. We have Zazie Beetz, who plays one of the candidates. Bill Skarsgård plays one of the candidates as well.
Tony Hale
plays a candidate. But even actually that guy, the first guy who gets cut, is really good. I can't remember his name. Oh, it's incredibly sweet. And it's the whole idea of like the importance, what is important in life, or what is important
to you.
To you, yeah. And you see this character, Winston Duke plays, looking at people's lives who he has sent to like the real world.
Yeah.
And how he feels like such a connection to them, and how he's trying to decide on a candidate based on what he's seeing in these almost video camera footage, video camera footage of the candidates he's already sent. And he has to make a decision towards the end of the movie, which is kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of, I don't want to say too much about, but it's just that decision in life of like what road or what path we decide to go down in terms of like positivity, negativity, cynicism, realism, all this type of stuff, and it asks a lot of questions. But the biggest thing I read into this, it's just the biggest thing that happened to this movie is the fact that it came out during COVID.
Yeah, I know.
And it just didn't lift off. Yeah. And I hope now, you say it's still on Netflix there, is it?
It says so.
Okay, so I'd love it just to get this like a lease of life almost, yeah. Because it's like, honestly, I was going through movies from 2020. I can't see anything that was better than it.
Yeah, it's like, I would make a strong case that this deserves many more Oscars than Nomadland.
Yeah, because even like the whole, it's based in almost a desert, mm-hmm. and the cinematography is incredible. It's just an incredible concept, I think, is what it's all about.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But for me, what also really did it was the score.
Yeah.
Someone by the name of Antonio Pinto. His score, especially in the last scene.
Yeah.
With the cinematography, with the script, with the performances, is just...
And that's a single scene as well. Incredible. Where he gives that monologue. That's like all shot in one go. And it's, again... Like Winston Duke, I know he's kind of famous for playing M'Baku from Black Panther. He's also in Us, isn't he?
He's in all of us, David. In our hearts and in our minds.
In Us, he's Jordan Peele movie, which I think would be his two biggest roles, but this is...
He's in The Fall Guy, which is coming up as well. Yeah. So like, I hope he's been given the chance to do something else this good as well. Yeah. And also, what Joe's even more violently disgusting about this movie, first time writer director.
Yeah, incredible.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Oh, I love it. I had a very good time with it.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're to get anything from this podcast, go out and watch 9 Days.
Yeah. That's
incredible.
Right, should we get back into the more shit movies? Let's go. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Wow, what a bunch of tonal shift. Right, David, the Spangler family is back. You've not seen this. I won't spoil it for you.
No, don't worry about it.
Are you going to watch this?
I might.
Yeah, fine. Okay.
I have a couple of things to say about it.
Spangler family are back, David, and they're staying in the New York City firehouse, and they've been charged by the city to take down the ghosts. But the little girl Ghostbuster, played by, what's her face, McKenna Grace, she's too young to be a Ghostbuster, so she's not allowed to be a Ghostbuster.
Why?
Anymore.
Who's telling her not to be a Ghostbuster?
The mayor, David. The mayor says she can't be a Ghostbuster.
That's like
anymore.
What happened in the last movie.
I know, and the mayor's like, no Ghostbusting for you, but she's like, but Buster makes me feel good. And he goes, I don't care. You're too young.
She Ray Parker Jr. Yeah.
And then so now it's up to Finn Wolfhard, who's clearly checked out of this movie. Paul Rudd and Kerry Coon.
He's got to get back to Stranger Things.
He's given a side plot that is so stupid. Basically, I'll just ruin this for this. He's just like, he does nothing for the whole movie except try and get like Slimer. And he just keeps getting slime. Yeah. And it's just like, he clearly was on set like 3 days. Yeah. Anyway, but then also, so you have all those original characters. You have those four characters. Yeah. Then you have Podcast. Then you have Lucky. So you have those from the last movie.
Yeah.
Then you also have Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, you have Ernie Hudson, you have the mayor, you have Annie Potts, and a load of other people. And then they're like, so that's, what are we at now? We're at
10?
10, if not, no, what's it? It's 4 and 6. No, we have 11 now. And they're like, get Kumail Nanjiani in here. Get Paul, James Acaster in here.
Yeah.
And then there's also another girl they bring in who's a ghost. And they're Patton Oswalt, of course. It's so overstacked. There's so many characters. No one is given anything good enough to do to make it worthwhile. It's like they learned no lessons from the last one, which is frustrating because I actually quite enjoyed that. The ghost busting itself happens twice, and basically there's this magical orb that has some spooky powers in it, and it's dropped into the shopkeeper Dan Aykroyd, who has a magic shop, and he investigates it, and it's bad vibes, and it leads to more bad vibes. And there's some weird fucking ghost stuff in it that makes no sense. And basically, there's no good ghost busting until the end of the movie as well. And the whole Frozen Empire, similar to Age of Ultron, David, is like 2 minutes.
Wow.
I know, the trailer makes it look like it's going to be a big...
So
like,
that's the end of the movie.
It's like the last 10 minutes is Frozen Empire. Mm. And it's laughable how small scale it is
so
in regards
it's
to like...
It's a Frozen... city or frozen town section of the city,
a frozen block.
There you go.
But like, it's so anticlimactic at the end. It's just a wet fart of a movie. They clearly rushed it out and then just wanted to put everyone in it. I laughed, I had a good time laughing at it. Paul Rudd is great in it. He really commits.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd's really good in it, but I don't know if that's him being funny or just really strange.
Yeah.
Kumail Nanjiani is a good time in it, but like, again, his character is just, there's a whole thing about his ancestors and everything. James Acaster is he needs a better agent. And yeah, it's just, it wasn't necessary.
So this is now, well, hold on, five years since the last one? Or is that?
No, we saw it in 2020, didn't we?
Oh, it was 2020.
Or 2021?
Oh, was it? Okay, sorry. I thought this was pre-COVID.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, I think...
it was just me, you, and like two other people in the cinema. It was 20... Oh, no. Go ahead.
No, sorry. This isn't the same director or writer.
It's the same writer. It's the same writing team, but different director. And the director is Gil Keenan, who's done nothing good, in my opinion.
Yeah. So Jason Reitman has nothing to do with this?
No.
Okay. Because that's, I think, what we enjoyed about the last one, is they took it out of New York, made it a completely different story. So what, like... my first thing would be, when I'm writing the next story, is like road trip.
They just have to go around. Yeah. They were like, well, we're going to need a couple of Ghostbusters stations all over America. And they go back to the firehouse.
Yeah. It's like, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
You stop doing it.
And it's just like, the whole appeal of Ghostbusters is like, imagine Exterminators, but it's for ghosts.
Yeah.
And they just keep getting it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call it simple. But it's like,
It would be like the Avengers, except the Avengers just keep battling in New York.
Yeah, well.
I know they do a battle a lot in New York, but you know what I mean? Like, like, how much more interesting would it be if, like, you know, you have, say, you have Paul Rudd and the group from the last movie, and they have to go and they meet Kumail Nanjiani in Minnesota.
Yeah,
and then they have to go to Seattle to clear out some ghosts. Yeah. And then they have to go down to California or something like that. Yeah. Like,
let's say, not this, because it's a bit dark, but like, where all the... you know, like, they have to go to Selma. Yeah. They have to, like, follow, like, American ghost stories all over, like, America. Or even, like, they have to go to a literal ghost town.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. They
literally ghostbust. There's, like, the first ghost is a dragon. I'm like, how does that... like, what even is that? What even is that? What? There was, like, a dead dragon? It's so stupid. It's just really poor.
Yeah.
And I want better from Ghostbusters because it's a good concept. And I just feel like they've overstuffed it now. And even like the family drama stuff was quite interesting. There was like hints of it being interesting in this. But it was just, again, not enough time.
Yeah.
Bill Murray's phoning it in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How much do you get paid for this? Do you think?
I don't know. But he's not in it that much, so. Okay. Ernie Hudson's great.
Yeah.
Looks fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of it.
Fair. Speaking of Frozen Empires...
this is my favorite movie of the month.
Let's talk about the new Empire, Godzilla X Kong. Do you know, this is the new rap album.
Yeah.
Godzilla featuring Kong.
Yeah.
No, this is the newest movie from the Universal. No, it's not Universal. Legendary?
Monsterverse?
Legendary. No, because you know the way the Universal have a Monsterverse, but also Legendary?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Anyway. This is the Legendary Monsterverse. So we have Godzilla and we had Kong Skull Island, we had Godzilla King of Monsters, then King of the Monsters. Then we had Godzilla versus Kong.
We had Monarch, the TV show.
Okay, yeah, I didn't.
No, I didn't watch that.
Yeah. And now we have Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which is a sequel to all those movies.
Yeah.
So where we ended previously, we had Godzilla is living on the surface.
Yeah.
And he is kicking ass against the...
Kaijus. Titans? Mutos. Titans, yes.
Titans. And he's keeping Earth safe while... well, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And then on the Hollow Earth?
Yeah, in Hollow Earth.
In Hollow Earth.
Kong is in Hollow Earth.
Kong lives in Hollow Earth. And this is all being run by Monarch, who are a government agency?
Sure.
But... there is a signal coming from Hollow Earth that is being sent to Godzilla, and Godzilla is now
getting angry.
He's trying to power up by fighting other
titans
and gaining power from nuclear facilities, while King Kong has a toothache.
Yes.
So there's some sort of deep underlying danger that's coming, and we don't know what's going on, but you'll soon find out.
Yeah.
It comes in the last 40 minutes of the movie. So that's kind of where it's at. You've seen a Godzilla and Kong movie. It's a kaiju movie pretty much, and it's what I will say is it's not terrible. I think it's probably better than the last one. No, is it better than the last one? Probably not. I don't think it's better than
I think it's way better than the last one.
Okay.
Because there's less human shit in it. And there's I feel like the last one had so many moving parts of the human stuff.
Okay, yeah, fair.
And this just was like, hey, you want to spend like...
There is less characters.
You want to spend like 30 minutes with monsters?
Yeah, there is less human characters in this. It is good, the fact that you do get to see... You do get to spend time with the monsters, but mainly Kong.
Yeah. Well, see, he's the most expressive, so it kind of makes sense you'd spend more time with him than the big scaly...
Yeah.
...guy.
Yeah, I suppose. But yeah, it's silly. And it's not...
Mindless.
It's not it's not good. I think you can agree, objectively, it's not good. Like, as much as you enjoyed it...
I think... It's see what are you what is good, David?
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, objectively good.
But what do you mean objectively
good? Put it on a spectrum, like
a spectrum of
9 to 5
to a kick-ass time.
9 to 5 versus Driveway Dolls.
it's closer to look, David. Look, okay. I fucking love this movie. I had so much fun. I don't know what it was. I was in need of a silly movie.
Yeah.
I was in need of just turning my brain off. It's. Dialogue is appalling.
Yeah.
The story makes no fucking sense. Like, what? Like, there's psychological, there's like psychopathic,
psychotic?
No, what's the word? Like,
psychedelic.
No, what's the word I'm looking for? Jesus Christ.
Psychosomatic.
Yeah, something, I don't know. There's just psycho thoughts being sent out over the globe.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
what's the word I'm looking for? Being sent out to like all the aliens to warn them of incoming threat. There's like...
Aliens?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Monsters, titans, whatever. And it's just like, it just makes no sense. And the movie is just like, it's just a vague construct of a plot to lead to smashing... And
so this movie was written backwards. They knew they had to get to the last bit.
Yeah.
And they wrote it backwards.
Which is funny because I watched the original King Kong from 1933.
Yeah.
Also a great movie. Similar to this in the sense of like, it's just monkey chaos.
Yeah.
And the exact same thing happened where the director writer was like, I just want a scene where there's a big monster, like a big monkey fighting planes in the Empire State Building. And he wrote backwards.
Yeah.
Similar to this. And I don't care. It's so fun. And I think it just has a layer of nobody's trying to showboat. Nobody's trying to be cool. They all know they're in a...
They all know they're in a movie.
They all know they're in a movie. And it's like, unlike Fast and Furious, which they're all trying to be so cool.
Yeah.
And it's bad.
Yeah.
This is just joyous fun.
I will say Dan Stevens' character. He's trying not to be cool, but he ends up being pretty cool.
Bright Tyree Henry's great in it as well. I think your one Rebecca Hall really understood the assignment. She's just like, And there's a bit of like heart in it. It's that's all good. The effects are not mind-blowing. It doesn't have to be super realistic, but it's not enough to take you out of the movie in a way because you're in that world. And the monster design is great. I think that it's so good that there's a scene with basically just monkeys.
Yeah.
No subtitles.
Yeah.
And we know what they're saying. And I think that's really impressive. They do the thing which they love doing in Hollywood now, which is introducing a baby version of something. They have Baby Kong, who's just the best, David. And you know why?
Expressive character.
He's just so expressive. He's got the biggest of eyes, David. And every time he speaks, it's not even... There's no volume control. It's just... It's just that. And he's screaming the whole time. And he's trying to kill Kong.
It's always an emergency.
Friends of Kong, David.
Yeah.
And they're trying to take down the Scar King. It's just a really fun time. If someone said this is the worst movie I've ever seen, I'm like, fine. Hate joy. Hate happiness. Go be miserable with your life. But if you want to have a fun time and just turn your brain off and just live in Hollow Earth.
Which Hollow Earth?
No spoilers, David. But yeah, I just think I just had a really fun time. I think it's so well paced in the sense of like, you don't spend long enough with a conversation or a plot point to ever feel like you're being burdened with it because you're just moving straight ahead. There's a scene in particular where she's reading carvings of like, oh, they have an ancient story here. Let me just read this. Yeah. And you swear she had a piece of paper
with the plot. Is that not a very like exposition scene?
Such a leap. As like, and then they'll say a girl who's 5'3" and from this particular island will come and do this thing, and then that will save everything.
Yeah.
It's so nonsense. But again, it's just trying to lead up to monster smashing.
See, I feel like in the past or in months to come, you're going to hate a movie and you're going to give the exact same excuses being terrible.
I will, David. But you know what? This movie had no right to be good.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Ghostbusters had a right to be good.
It had right to be good.
This movie
had
a right to be good.
Why not?
Adam Wingard.
Yeah, but like, it's how much money does it have behind it?
I don't know.
I'd say 150 million.
The new Empire, the name's bad as well.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
135 million.
Yeah.
Fine. Whatever. But like, Flash, 2 million. 200 million.
Yeah, because that movie was horrendous.
Yeah.
They had to do all the reshoots and that.
Look, I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's a really fun time. And I just find like a lot of movies we've been watching recently have been like good, but not enjoyable.
Yeah, I will say, I will agree with that. I'm
pressed to find a really fun 2-hour movie. But yeah, I don't know. It's just ridiculous. And I just had a really fun time.
Yeah.
And I just think...
But you were laughing straight away from the start. which felt like you were in a good mood to start with.
I was in a bad mood.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not arguing. I don't want to ruin your vibe, but like, personally, well, then, I just...
Yeah, okay. Well, we move on to this next movie.
Oh, sorry. Do we have one more movie?
We have one more movie,
oh,
David.
Fuck. Sorry, I thought this was the last movie.
No, one more. Ricky Stenicki, David. Oh, fuck. I've ended on two good ones for Gary just to keep the vibes up. So, Ricky Stenicki, we talked about it last month. We were talking about Zac Efron needs a serious role, but he did this one. This is basically about these three boys, played by Zac Efron, Jermaine Fowler, and Andrew Santino, who invent a fake friend when they're young to get away with them... to use it as an excuse and stuff like that. So they make this guy up called Ricky Stenicki. So like, oh, Ricky did it, or all these sort of things. But basically they've, over time, they've built up a dossier of like tracking his life, so they always have the story straight. And it gets to a point where they go to a concert, they go to a Marc Rebillet concert, who's that guy I sent you for the flamingo song.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
So they go to his concert. That's not important to the story, but I had a fun time.
You liked that.
I liked that. Also, there's a character called Gary in this as well. And what you call it? They turn their phones off because they have to, because they have it down to a T. They can't be tracked. But it turns out one of their wives goes into labor and has a kid. And they're like, where were you? It's like, oh, we have to see Ricky. And they're like, get him here right now. We're giving out to him. We haven't seen this guy in years. So they end up hiring John Cena, who plays a guy called Rock Hard Ron. But he's now been signed up to play Ricky Stenicki, who is a crude... parody songs singer who working in Vegas, who he calls them his jizz jams. They're songs to jizz to, David. And what you call it, they hire him. He's a complete loose cannon, but he ends up taking the role really seriously because, like you said, he's a proper actor.
Yeah.
And he starts infiltrating into their lives. He all of a sudden gets a job in one of the firms. He's friends with the mother-in-law, and as you can imagine, things spiral out of control. It's so silly humor. It's so stupid. I had a fun time. I couldn't say everyone will, but I will say John Cena commits to every scene 100%. You can tell Zac Efron's not really into it. William H. Macy's in it, and he's all right. But watch it for John Cena. He is box office in every scene. The story, as you can imagine with these type of, like, what you call it, raunchy comedies, when it tries to be serious... like the dramatics, it just dips so hard towards the end, and then it does come back up again. But like the scenes of meeting Rock Hard Ron at the beginning, and then him being Ricky, and then like going into the lives, that like first 45 minutes hour is top notch, and then it kind of goes off a cliff in a way. But look, it's a streaming movie, it's on Amazon Prime. Yeah. You know, it doesn't like you can pause it and come back to it, kind of thing like that. Yeah. But look, if you're looking for a good looking for a good raunchy comedy, Kira, your girlfriend, watched it as well. I was surprised at that. She gave it 2.5 stars. So it's the middle of the road. But yeah, watch it for John Cena. And then to see him go out at the Oscars and kind of get some more laughs as well. I was happy for him.
Fair. Yeah, I don't know if I'll watch it.
No, you won't. But yeah, that's March, David.
Done and dusted.
Done and dusted.
When's this coming out?
The next 2 days.
Very good.
Yeah, is that right?
No, yeah, sorry. No, it's just, yeah.
Well, I quickly fire with what's coming out. So we have got last weekend, Monkey Man came out, directed by Dev Patel. It's like John Wick, but it's Dev Patel.
I'm Jordan Peele.
He produces it. I'm not going to say too much about it because I kind of want you to go on a bit blind about it, David. But
why would you wish that upon me?
I don't want you to see things. look, I think I won't say my thoughts on it, but yeah, it's a really exciting project. I love to see Dev Patel get a directing gig like this and bring such an interesting perspective into these movies, put it that way.
Cool.
You got The First Omen, don't know why it's here, couldn't give a shit.
No.
Moving on.
Although it's supposed to be alright.
Yeah.
It's rated highly, but I don't know if
it's Civil War. Alex Garland.
I am so excited. Like, this looks class. It actually does. I like Alex Garland, I will say. He's a high concept director. Is he? Yeah, he's high concept. he's a little bit off the chain, but this is like what America would be like if it was like a modern civil war. But I feel like America's probably like two steps away from this already. Yeah. So, no, like, I think this is... It's cool.
Yeah. Really interesting concept. I have avoided all the trailers because I don't want to know anything going into it. Although he has come out recently and said, he's like, I don't like directing.
Yeah, right. Because he's a writer.
He's a writer, yeah. So, look, I'm intrigued. There's a really good talent in it as
Kirsten Dunst supposed to be fascinating. Kirsten Dunst,
so I'm looking forward to it for that reason as well. Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, David.
Why?
Moving on. Challengers is coming out.
Oh, raunchy.
Raunchy Zendaya. She's horny. a tennis player. And
she breaks her knee.
She breaks her knee, and then she can't be tennis. But now she's stuck.
She can't be tennis.
She can't be tennis. And then she's stuck in a. She's she finds herself in a love triangle with the former Prince of Wales and the little dancing boy from West Side Story.
Oh, is that who they play in other movies?
Yeah. So the one of the guys, the guy from West Side Story.
Oh yes.
And then the other guy was in The Crown.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, it looks good. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really want to see a. I'm interested in it because I really want to see season day just knock something out of the park. I haven't seen Euphoria, so I could watch that and see why people like her, but I've just seen her be Mary Jane. I know this sounds bad, moody girlfriend to white nerdy man. Yeah, whether it be Tom Holland, Timothy Chalamet, or
she was in that dancing movie with Zac Efron.
Oh, Zac Efron being the other one. And then also she was in Malcolm and Marie as well, which I haven't seen. So I could just watch the better movie she's in. Space Jam, the new one. She plays Lola Bunny.
Oh, she does, yeah. This is the same guy who did Call Me By Your Name, is that correct?
And the other one.
Don't know what the other one is.
The other horny movie.
Horny?
I feel like he loves doing horny movies. Oh, yeah, Bones and All.
Yeah, less horny.
Less horny, but there's...
More, yeah. Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. The horny cannibals.
Yeah. Oh, I'm interested to see. Yeah. The problem with it is, again, and this is Hollywood, stop showing the movie in the trailer. Like, show them being horny at the start.
Yeah.
Don't tell us anything
else. Get the crowds
in. Yeah. Don't
tell
us anything
else.
Actually, you have a funny story. I don't know if you want to tell this, but you went into a movie secretly this recently.
I told nobody. I snuck in.
You went to
the fire.
A secret screening.
There was a secret screening on Omniplex, and... You can usually guess what it is based on the runtime, and the runtime was the exact same as Challengers. But the day it came, the day of the screening, they sent out information about the rating for the movie, and I was able to then deduce. It was then deducible that it was going to be Monkey Man, but obviously people had bought their tickets at that point, and I just noticed there was a lot of groups of women at it that I feel like we're looking forward to see Challengers, based on them fucking talking during the movie.
Yeah,
but
would you walk out? Would you, no, sorry.
Some guy did.
Okay.
But we saw the creator and someone walked out of that as well.
Wrong move. That movie was good.
I know. So yeah.
Is that it?
No, it's one more movie that I'm very excited about. Okay. It's called Boy Kills World.
Oh yeah.
It's basically about a deaf mute guy called Boy, and he basically, what's it says? And is trained by a mysterious shaman to repress his childhood imagination and become an instrument of death. It's super gory and violent. But the really interesting thing about it is that it's Billy Skarsgård.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I say, he plays this deaf, dumb character. So he can't speak and can't hear things. But he has an internal monologue throughout the movie. And it's voiced by an actor who I won't ruin for David because he hasn't watched it. But I think it's great casting. And I'm really excited to watch it for that reason alone.
I have heard about that, but I don't know who the character or the actor
is. Charlotte Copley's in it. Famke Jensen's in it as well.
Who's the director?
It's a guy called Moritz Moore who hasn't really directed any movies according to
because I thought it was the guy who did Upgrade, but it's not.
No. So yeah, so there's some good stuff coming up, although I feel like it's all kind of just like treading water until we get to the big summer blockbuster stuff.
Well, I mean, like, sometimes that these are the movies that you enjoy the most because you go in with lower expectations.
That's true.
Plus the fact, like, what is the big movie in the summer?
The first one is going to be the Fall Guy.
Oh yeah.
Then this is, when's Wolverine out?
That's the end of the year, no?
Is it?
I thought it was August. Okay, maybe. Cool. Maybe it's July.
What else is it this year? Well, this is not important. But other ones, just very quickly, what can I see here? What can I see here that's going to be good this year? Furiosa, Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, Civil War, Fall Guy, Inside Out 2, no. Wicked. Oh, Planet of the Apes. Gladiator 2. Anyway, there's loads of stuff coming out.
Yeah.
But that's for another time, David.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming back, David.
You're welcome.
Didn't think you'd do it. You son of a bitch. We got you. this camera. You've been punked. Let the people know what you've going on, David. Right. David, thank you very much. As always, listener. Hello, you still here? Thanks for listening. If you want to keep up to date with the podcast, you can follow at Reading the Peers on Instagram. There's also TikTok, YouTube, Letterboxd. All the links are in the description. Email readingthepeers@gmail.com if you want to give it to David or you want to tell us about Francis Ha.
Why would you want to give out a
book? Oh, you'd always want to give out to David. You want to subscribe and follow on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and give us 5 stars or else, David.
Yeah.
Big bad things will happen.
We'll come for you.
No, we'll send Ghostbusters after them. No, we'll send Kong.
Kong. No, Mini Kong. That was the other thing. I should have said this. They didn't get the whole perspective right because when they're dead, so weird.
No, so weird. Yeah, because like Kong is so little, Mini Kong is so little, and then obviously you see him as like as big as Christ the Redeemer or Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro, and you're like, I don't think he's that mini.
Sorry, go on.
But yeah,
we'll end the podcast.
There. End the podcast there.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No. As I said, I'm looking forward to some of those movies in April. Can't wait to talk about it.
We'll see you there, Dave.
I hope you can't wait for us to talk to them about them in front of you.
And see, we told people it'd be great chats. Look at that!